When we were growing up, we would go to the T and Ho Inn. Like, it's like, if you know, you know. And it was a magical land. The koi fish and the bridge, the ceremony of Chinese food was, I don't know, it was dying off or something, right? And eventually that restaurant closed. But there was no way you could recreate that at home. Jody and I both have memories of our moms bringing out this like massive pan. It wasn't a wok. And throwing in 18,000 vegetables and a bottle of sauce and hoping for the best. We ate it. We thought it was good, but we've almost made it a bit easier for you, and we're gonna demystify that today.
Is your homemade stir fry lacking that special something? Do your vegetables turn out soggy instead of crisp? In this episode, Jody and Kirsty break down the science and the art of the perfect stir fry. Our chefs share an easy four-ingredient sauce that is infinitely better than anything you can buy in a bottle. We also discuss why you should not cook all of your vegetables at the same time, and a secret technique called velvety. You would not believe how simple it is to achieve that authentic restaurant flavor at home. It just requires a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of restraint. And I ask the all-important question, do you really need a wok to achieve all of this? Listen to find out what Jody and Kirsty have to say about that. Hi, Jody and Kirsty. How are you today?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I am great. We haven't seen each other for a while. We took a little bit of a Christmas break, which everybody needs, and now we're refreshed and back, and I'm really excited about today's episode.
Are we refreshed? Are we? We were just talking about that.
I know.
I have missed you guys, though.
I know. I've missed you, too.
I've missed this dynamic, missed chatting, you know, having some good laughs over food. Well, I'm so happy to be back.
Yes. But yes, Kirsty, the treadmill's on full speed right now. So we're all running hard.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. I'm hearing that across the board, right? January's been a real storm.
You can say it. Shit storm. Shit show.
You can.
Oh yeah. You said shit on the last podcast. I thought that was great.
I'll say worse than shit, but not, I won't say it on the podcast. I'll try to edit myself.
The edited version of Jody. Well, before we jump all the way into the new year, I'm going to go back to December for a bit because I did successfully cook a turkey for Christmas.
Unbelievable. I'm not unbelievable. Amazing.
We're so proud of you and your turkey journey.
Thank you. And, you know, unbelievable. I'm sure there were a few, Kirsty. Don't worry. But I have to say the biggest thing was when you said cook it before Christmas, that changed my life because it was actually fun because we weren't making it on a deadline and we had time and it was just, the kids were more interested. There was just more stuff around making the turkey and we had a good time. It was, I made it on the 24th. We weren't doing much on the 24th. So let's go back to the beginning. So I did brine it for 2 days and Kirsty, you connected me with Colby at Four Quarter Butcher Shop and I got a turkey, well, half a turkey, because we've already talked about how big the turkeys are this year.
Which is so cool. That's something they just started doing recently, right? Because there's no such thing. People want a 12-pound turkey, no such thing.
And it was great because I don't have a very big roasting pan. It fit perfectly in the roasting pan. But I did brine it first. I brought it home. I put the salt on it, covered it up in the plastic wrap. I put it in the fridge. And then on the 24th, we brought it out and I did all the things on the turkey manifesto and in the oven it went and it came out so nice and brown. So then Stephen had to carve it and it was really easy to carve and it came out in very nice pieces and went into the pan perfectly.
That's so exciting. You know what it is? It's liberating, right?
Yes.
Liberating because we're not defined or constrained by the rules we think we had before, right? From, you know, when I talked to someone not too long ago, they're like, washing chicken or washing turkey. They're like, do we have to wash it? I'm like, absolutely not. Especially when you know the name of your handsome butcher, right? Right, Kirsty? Kirsty's going to agree with that. But because people do it because their parents did it. And then their parents did it. And I've got a great story. I think now is the time to tell this story because that's about liberation.
Okay.
Right, I've been holding on to this story for the right time. So when I first met my husband, and I don't know how long in, but he made me breakfast. And when he made me breakfast, he made bacon in a pan and he made scrambled eggs in a pot. And I'm like, interesting.
I remember you telling me this. I'm like, what?
After a couple times I'm like thinking about it, I'm like, I have a question for you. Did your mom make eggs in a pot? And he's like, yeah. So I called her up, but maybe by this time she was my mother-in-law. And I called up my mother-in-law and I was like, when you make breakfast, how do you do it? And she's like, my eggs are scrambled in a pot and my bacon's fried in a pan. I was like, interesting. I was like, did your mother make it that way? And she said, yes. And so if we go back a few generations, like we've got so many pots and pans. Like I've got lots of pots, lots of pans. I could make, you know, an egg for a dozen people in their own frying pan themselves, right? But our grandparents and our grandparents didn't have that. What they did was they had what they needed, and out of necessity, because the bacon was frying in the pan, the eggs were scrambled in a pot. Doesn't necessarily make sense. Isn't what you like that the functionality of it is. It works, but they did it without questioning because their parents did it. And that continues, right? Like the story of someone roasting a big piece of roast beef, and they would always take the roast beef when they got it and cut it in half and put it in the roasting pan. Like, why is that? And it was, like, if you trace it back, it was because grandma only had a roasting pan this big and the roast didn't fit in it. Then when they have a bigger one, you don't need to cut it in half. It was out of necessity for the size of the pan, and that was it. So I'm always interested in those stories and those things that we think we have to do, like making turkey the day of and under this pressure and under those constraints. Nobody likes it. Even as professional chefs, we do not like that. We would never do it because we don't have that liberty of time when we're feeding many people. But it's just it's a really cool thing when you're like, I don't have to follow those rules because they're not rules that make sense. It's more based on tradition and not tradition that brings us joy.
That's so true. And I felt like I was smashing all the traditions or all the things I've watched other people do and hopefully showing the kids a new way of doing it.
You've made new traditions. You've started a tradition.
I made the gravy from scratch, which I've never done. And I've never really, there was a lot of packaged gravy going on in various households between Stephen and I. And it was easy and so delicious. And Stephen loves gravy and it was so good. And I made it all the day before. But then the day after Christmas, we did some turkey sandwiches, Kirsty, with the gravy. And it was awesome.
We're so proud of you.
And it was so fun that even us and the kids, as we're eating, we're like, we could just do this anytime on a smaller scale or whatever. So now it's just like, oh, we might just do that in February when it's cold or when everybody's home or something. So that's exciting too.
My in-laws do a turkey in like July. Like they love a turkey dinner. I'm like, what's for dinner? They're like, turkey. I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay. Coming over. Great. Yeah. So we're going to now move from turkey to stir fry. I was actually very excited when you suggested this topic because I don't really think a lot about stir fry. We make it once in a while. It's often some leftovers in the fridge and we don't put a lot of thought into it. So I'd love to learn more about how to make a stir fry. What tools do you need? The sauces are really important and it's overwhelming at the grocery store. So why do you guys love stir fry?
Your stir fry and just the way you spoke of it sounds really uninspiring.
Leftovers?
Yes, I know.
Like it's not a leftover.
I know.
But then in reality, when people go out and celebrate, they'll like order or go to those restaurants and have, you know, like beef broccoli or any sort of stir fry or fried rice or dish. So people love it, but they're disconnected with it at home because they're not using the right ingredients. You mentioned a bottle of sauce.
No. When we were growing up, we would go to the Tea and Ho Inn.
Oh, such a memory.
You know, on Weber Street. I think it's a Shopper's Drug Mart now. And those, like, it's like, if you know, you know. And it was a magical land. Going into that, people had weddings there. There was the bridge.
The fish.
Yes, the koi fish and the bridge. And you would get, you know, I remember they switched to buffet once. I remember it was a real controversy, right? Because the ceremony of Chinese food was, I don't know, it was dying off or something, right? And eventually that restaurant closed. But there was no way you could recreate that at home. Jody and I both have memories of our moms bringing out this like massive pan. It wasn't a wok. and throwing in 18,000 vegetables and a bottle of sauce and hoping for the best. We ate it. We thought it was good, but we've almost made it a bit easier for you. And we're going to demystify that today, I think.
If it wasn't a bottle of sauce, it was like that VH black, dark, overly salty soy sauce.
China Lily, Jody.
It was just salt. It was just like salt sauce. But we have, yeah, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the key ingredients that you need to have and how they're versatile. You don't need them just for a stir fry.
Maybe just a couple of years ago, when Jody and I started really doing a lot on Instagram, and it was maybe only in the last 5 or 10 years that we discovered, like, what's that missing flavor? How am I getting tea and hoan, right? And it was with Shaoxing. I've got my bottle here, the Shaoxing cooking wine. And we just on Instagram were like, hey, what did we say, Jody? Like,
we said the word for authentic takeout or Chinese takeout flavor, use Shaoxing cooking wine.
Shaoxing cooking wine. And it was really controversial. We got a huge like backlash of what are two white women saying, how can they say the word authentic Chinese cooking, right? And we were like, I mean, you know us, we're just like, whatever. There was a lot of views. We were happy about, and a lot of people were like, thank you. I didn't know this was the missing ingredient. This adds some saltiness, some sweetness. It adds that quintessential takeout aroma and taste to everything from fried rice to beef and broccoli.
You know, when you watch, you see Instagram and you're just here for the comments. That's one of our posts. We'll pin it to the top so people can find it. Yeah. We'll pin it to the top. You're just there for the comments. And so were we. We're not there to argue or fight. We're there to just a positive vibe, sharing our cooking tips, sharing our, you know, fun takes on it.
The answer to the question, right? The question was, what are two white women, you know, how do they have a right to say this? The answer is so that everyone can feel empowered to make it at home, right? And so it's like, oh, well, if, you know, this lady can do it at home, then Amy can too, right? I can buy this bottle, mix it up with, you know, our three other favorite ingredients, oyster sauce, soy sauce, sesame oil. That's it. Mixing those four ingredients together, that's the magic formula.
But what we do as cooks, what we all do is when we cook, we just give tribute to the culture. We try to be as authentic as possible, right? When we did early versions of Thai curries, we'd use brown sugar. Now we know that we're going to use palm sugar. Early, the first version of hummus that I ever ate, right? They talked about peanut butter, yuck, in there instead of tahini. You've got Greek style hummus. You've got Middle Eastern style hummus. You know, the Greek style is nice and lemony and bright, where the Middle Eastern is more sesame based. Both delicious, same ingredients, just a little tweak on the ratios.
Well, I would definitely be in the thank you camp because I didn't even know that sauce existed. And I've been bottling the stir fry. So the fact that you just said there's only four ingredients to make the sauce is very exciting for me. So do you make the sauce before or do you add it as you're cooking? How does it all work?
Let's break it down. Let's now, you know, share with our listeners how like, because I make stir fry all the, I don't know about you, Jody, but it's one of our favorite family meals. We have several recipes on our website. Beef and broccoli is probably our most popular, and it literally is that. And I think that's the first thing you have to recognize, is it's not overwhelming. It's not chopping for an hour, right? Choose one or two vegetables. What do you want to say, Jordan?
You know, even before that, and especially for Amy and friends in Amy's camp, which feels overwhelmed in the kitchen, right? Like once you are empowered with the knowledge that we give you, they'll be like, oh, I can do that. Like, right, you just declared that you're going to make a turkey not on Christmas. That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. So the stir fry, once you have the formula, my kids all have their own little recipe for it. My 11-year-old, he's got a book. It's called William Sauce, right? And it's for his noodles and his his version of it. He fries an egg and puts everything on it. So we'll you'll have one as well that you pass to your kids and they can whip up so quickly. But Kurt, go over the steps.
Okay. I'm going to try and do this in 2 minutes or less. So first thing I do is I get my wok hot, and we'll talk about wok versus frying pan afterwards, but I love my wok because you get wok. We'll talk about this. We'll get wok high. I get my wok hot. I mix together my four ingredient sauce, right? We'll have the ratios obviously in the show notes or in our recipes. I chop my two or three vegetables. It could be broccoli, onion, and ginger. I will slice my protein. Let's call it beef today. And I'll mix a little bit of that sauce with the beef as well. So the sauce is doing two things now. It's being a sauce and it's being a marinade. The only difference is, and if you watched Walk with Jan, right, one of the best food television productions ever, he used what's called Wonder Powder and everything. It's just cornstarch. Like, I loved that show so much as a kid. I was like, what is this Wonder Powder? It's cornstarch. So the only difference is I'm adding some cornstarch. You could either add it to the sauce, but I add it to the meat. And then to make the stir fry, it's a dance, right? Your vegetables are going in and out. Your meat is going in and out. Everything is going back in, saucy, saucy, and serve. At some point, I'm throwing a pot of rice on. And then it's like, I'm going to have fun, right? The kids love to, Jody, I know you talk about your little container of sesame seeds, right? How fun is that? We love green onions to put on top. Charlie loves peanuts, like chopped peanuts on top of any. I do too. I love a cashew. We have a cashew chicken recipe on our website as well. But that's basically it. Make a sauce. Some of it's going to marinate. Some of it is going to sauce. Chop your veg, slice your meat, and get going in the wok. I think that's it. I pretty much covered it. That's it in a nutshell.
That's crazy that it's that easy. I'm not going to lie.
And I think like the one time I wanted to make a stir fry and I had celery, cabbage, and carrot. Like, I think that's what I have right now in my fridge. And I'm like, but it was delicious. I added chicken. I added cashews on rice. Everyone like freaking loved it.
I love that there's so many different combinations that, and you can kind of add your own personal sort of way of doing it. Now I have a question. You mentioned rice, which I like. I've also know there's noodles. So tell me about noodles versus rice in a stir fry, or doesn't really matter?
I don't think it matters at all, right? Like it's whatever you have on hand. If you can get your hands on a nice like chow mein, you know, we like a fresh chow mein noodle that we get at things are getting easier to find at any grocery store. I went to Sobeys the other day and I was like, what is this? An international grocery store? Like even the aisles are labeled, but for each nationality, I was amazed. Right. I'm like at the supermarket, I kind of creep on people sometimes and I'm like behind this guy in line. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's buying miso, tofu, green onions. I'm like, ooh, he's making a stir fry. I swear this happened like 2 days ago. But I'm like, at Sobeys, you're getting those ingredients.
Okay, Kirstie, that sounds like very simple instructions and lots of options. I just had a couple of questions. So when you talk about sesame and peanuts, do you put those on? You don't cook them. It's like as you're about to eat?
You know what? Sometimes I do. I like to stir fry cashews, for instance. Ooh. I feel like they soak up the sauce a little bit. But yeah, I don't know what it was. It was probably I made pad thai and one of the kids really just loved that peanut on top type thing. And so then, yeah, you just have this crap in your pantry anyways. Just put it out and see what happens, whether it's chili flakes, sesame seeds on top is a beautiful garnish. But yeah, I just found it. I honestly didn't even know. We have it on our website. It's like cabbage, carrot and celery, like stir fry. And so then So then the steps are broken down there. The other thing that we did discover, we've done a cookbook episode with you. And one of the cookbooks that we talk about, one of our favorites, is called The Walk by Kenji Lopez. Fantastic author. Well, Jody reads it by her bedside. So she was reading one night about velveting, which is you're finding in all the, you know, you go to Chinese takeout, all of the meats are so thin and so like almost melt in your mouth. And that's a process called velveting, by which you thinly slice your, let's say, chicken and just, I don't know if marinate is the right word, but you're tossing it with a very, very small amount of baking soda and water, very small amounts. So the velveting, Jody, what you're going to tell us the science as you do. Thank you.
I love the science of it, you know, like I don't want to just, right, it comes down to the pots and the pans. I don't want to just do, I want to know why. So the why behind the velveting is the baking soda changes the pH of the meat and it prevents it from creating really tight bonds, right? So when proteins cook, they coil and they come together and then they squeeze out, push out moisture and tight bonds. So it's chewy and it becomes drier. So when the pH changes and they can't get those tight bonds, it just stays tender. So you're always like, I was always amazed. Why is this so gosh darn tender? How can I get that? That's how you get it.
Velveting is a great description because it becomes velvety tender. Now the other flavor component to stir fry that you're not getting in any bottle is something called wokai. It is the smoke, like the flavor of the smokiness that you get off of the sides of your wok. So I've really love my wok. It's a carbon steel wok. It's really thin. I'm showing it off here. So the sides are really thin. We're not getting up to like 8,000 BTUs that you would in a Chinese restaurant, right? Like even on a really good gas stove, but this is going to help. So I'm going to get this really, really hot first. Colby does a really good job of seasoning it. That's the only thing. It's like keeping a knife sharp or keeping your cast iron pan, right? You do need to take care of these things, but if you take care of them, they will give back, right? In volumes. And so then when I heat this up and when I start cooking, this smoke kind of billows up and over my stir fry. So I'm stir frying. I'm not making you asked before, I think, how do I keep the vegetables from becoming soggy? You're stirring and you're frying. You're always moving. And the surface area on this thing here, it's like it's real. I'm trying to show it off here. There's your picture. The surface area on this wok is really, really big. The sides are just as hot as the bottom. So I'm constantly moving the food in there. And then I'm removing it. Remember I talked about earlier the dance moves? And then I'm removing it before it's even finished cooking because everything's going to come back. It's going to get saucy. And that's when it's going to give that final hit.
We're telling you to cook those ingredients separately, right? They're all different textures. They're all different thicknesses. They all have different water content. So everything's going in and out of the pan, right? Even the anatomy of the wok, the bottom is direct contact with the heat. That's where you're getting your searing of your meat. You can do that first or you can do that later. When you do it first, right, it can be a little bit messy. You're going to use a wet paper towel on a tongs and just wipe it around to just clean that up in between putting things into the pan. Then, so let's say you did meat first, then you'll do an onion, pull that out, carrot, pull that out, right? And maybe you'll be like, I want one more veg, whatever, that, like zucchini. Then you do the zucchini. Do not add every single vegetable in your cupboard. My mother, my father, they did that. I love them. I ate it. I survived. But for pure deliciousness, I'm not adding every single vegetable. This isn't where we parents like think we're shining because we're like, my kid only ate vegetables tonight. Gross, right? Because everyone, then some are soggy, some are overcooked, some are slimy. No, just respect it. A couple of vegetables, then you're done. So then once you had all of those out, then you could bring them all back to the wok. Then you sauce, you're done. Sprinkle whatever you want on that, right? Kirstie said fresh green onions. I'm getting behind that because all of her recipes have that, right? I was just like, no before, but I've got sesame seeds beside my stove. I'm adding those, right? A cashew or a peanut. Not all of them, not the whole nut bowl.
Costco, mixed nuts, throw them in there.
A good stir fry is about restraint. Do not add everything.
Amy, you had another question hidden in there. Do I get the pan hot? Right. And I think we're like half a dozen, if not more, podcasts in. And I maybe we're not doing our job right, because the answer is 99% always yes. You preheat your oven without blinking an eye. You preheat your pots and pans before adding that oil. And then your food will dance. Some may say stir fry across that pan.
Amy, liken it to a cold plunge versus a hot tub. Where do you want to go right now?
Hot tub.
Cold plunges are great. I love them. But when you're there, you're like, what the fuck am I doing there? That's exactly what those vegetables will say when they're in a cold water.
So we want them in we want them to go right into the sauna or right into the hot tub.
What a great analogy, because you're right. When I'm in the cold plunge, I'm counting the seconds until I can get out, where the hot tub or the sauna, I could just hang out. I'm good to go.
I'm not bashing cold plunges. I love them. But when we apply those same principles, hot or cold, in a kitchen, you know what the cold is. What am I doing here?
That poor broccoli. Get me the hell out of here.
Okay, so the question of the day is, do you need a wok?
Kirstie's going to finish, because I think that's the passionate answer. First, my answer is no, but yes.
Cheater.
This is the real question. Do you love stir fry? Right? It's like, do you love cooking? So that means the question is, am I going to invest in a good knife? Yes, you are.
Kirstie, you love the wok. But in a previous episode, when we were talking about kitchen gadgets, you hate one-use items. So what else can I do with the wok?
Oh, that's a really good question. It is good for, I do break it out for other things. Like, because it's got such a great surface area, you can make a really big batch of like pasta carbonara, right? A lot of people use their woks for deep frying as well, because of the shape of it. You get this kind of wider surface area, but you don't have to use as much oil. So there's two. Do you want more, or are you just going to go buy your freaking wok?
I know, I'm buying the wok.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad that you cleared that up, because, you know, you have more than one use for the wok. And yes, now I'm much more interested in getting the wok. So that's good to know. But I'm actually, regardless wok or not, I'm very excited to give stir fry a try, because I feel like you've broken it down into such easy steps. And the sauce sounds so yummy. Jody, you're right. I don't want to go to the grocery aisle anymore. I want to make that sauce, because it's going to be so yummy.
A lot of cities now, including ours, have the TNT supermarket, right? So, you're going to put it on the show notes, right? Because sometimes it's all about the label. You know, you're looking for Shaoxing cooking wine. You might not look at this label and think that. I think it says up here, but not, you're looking for some sort of label like this. TNT supermarket, or we shop locally at New City Supermarket. And sometimes it's just knowing when to look for, and then you are empowered. As Jody always says, empower yourself.
Thank you for joining us in the kitchen today. If you'd like to know more about what we talked about, including recipes, recommendations, and links to Jody and Kirstie's full selection of online classes, you can find everything in the show notes or visit the Culinary Studio website. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to the podcast and take a moment to leave us a review. Chef Over Your Shoulder is a member of the Bespoke Productions Hub podcast network. Happy cooking.